complicated one.
It was a complicated case. Yeah.
Yeah,
It's a
100
parts to that
case.
question.
Well, welcome, and we're now recording to, and then in about a week or so, we will have the recording available at boardoptions.com if you wanted to download it and take another look at it. But we are now recording. What I want to do is to introduce the case writers to you. Then we're going to go around the room and what did your groups decide? And then we'll give the ball back to the case writers for their reactions to what you all said. I want to introduce the two partners of the Wilson Group Compensation, Rhonda Farrington and Susan Malinowski. Rhonda has extensive background in designing executive and director total compensation plans. She's a certified compensation professional through World at Work, a past member of the board of directors of the New England Compensation Consortium, and she's the past president of the New Hampshire chapter of the American Society for Training and Development, now known as the Association for Talent Development. Susan Malinowski is her partner. Susan advises boards of directors and executives on strategic compensation. Prior to joining the Wilson Group, Susan worked in leadership positions at General Cinema, Aetna, Barclays Credit, and the Community Newspaper Company. Susan is a certified compensation professional, certified benefits professional, a global remuneration professional through World at Work, and a member of the New England Compensation Consortium. So, welcome both of you to seat at the table. What I'd like to do now is to go through the different groups. The first group is Babs, Craig, John, Josh, and Monica. Do you have a spokesperson?
I'm it. Tag, I'm it.
All right, Babs, you're it.
Right, here we go. So they decided there are two candidates, but there is actually only one candidate. And that is because unlucky number two was abrasive to multiple people. I would have to fire a bunch of people as soon as he came in the door. Plus, he's never had a CEO role, and that might feel be difficult for him to have the authority and the respect from this well-established company. So we're really looking at candidate number one, and what are we going to give her to move? One thing that was interesting that Josh said in the group is, even though it looks like there's not really a reason for candidate number one to move, she's still continuing the conversation. So there's something there that we don't know. It might be that this PE event at her existing firm might not work out in her favor. So maybe that's why she's still open to the conversation and moving to the only place that's cheaper than San Francisco out of the top big cities. So anyway, we think that we looked at things like, does she have sales experience? Because that's more important for a contract manufacturer than a lot more engineering experience which they have. And also they want global growth, so we have to look at her potential as global growth. But let's get down to the money. So let's get her to move. Obviously there's two packages we think of. One is the one that's initially given to a candidate at this level, because a candidate at this level is going to come back and negotiate. And then what is the package that will ultimately say is the max that the board would approve? So there'd be two packages, but we'll talk about somewhere in the middle for both of them. We're looking at a base of 490, and it was interesting because we went back and forth about whether it should be 490 or that magic number 500 that's so important for a CEO to feel like they made it. But 490, 500, an annual, which is, we're thinking of giving the annual short-term bonus as based on the metrics of the 20% 3-year growth that they had planned and some KPIs about around SGA reduction. And that would be at 70%, which is what the previous CEO had. But we're thinking the most important and a critical part of this package is a $300,000 sign-on bonus to make up for the equity that they're not going to realize at their existing company. Long-term incentive, we said the equity should just be at 100%. and also an attractive relo package. You know, the whole deal where you buy their house at market value, you know, when they get 90 days of expenses, or, you know, and it's a set limit on what the carpets and curtains piece would be. And then a severance package that would look at 2 years with certain conditions put around it. Okay, team, what did I miss?
Anybody?
The equity piece of it.
Oh,
so
go
we,
for it.
Yeah, we were curious because we thought that the equity of the previous CEO was quite low, actually at 1.5%. So we were curious at what the board would approve. But no matter what we did, you know, numbers were thrown out like matching that equity, it'd be vested over the next 4 years and maybe tied to the KPIs. So we didn't really actually get to the equity conversation, but we did think that because that's the piece that she sort of asked for, that we were curious if we, for sure it'd have to be vested, but that if 1.5 would be sufficient.
I think the elephant in the room that we wrestled with is something that, full disclosure, I worked with Susan for a client a few years ago. The same situation was is that the incumbent had been there a long time and had fallen below market, and yet we're trying to find the best person that we can. And so we worked a lot on how to bridge that gap.
The other thing, Babs, did you mention the KPIs?
Yeah, we had talked about different KPIs. They had said that there are two KPIs that were stated in the case was the 20% revenue growth over 3 years. And we had a lot of discussion about whether that was the right growth level for what they were trying to do and whether there were other events that should get put in the mix or other acquisitions, any M&A activity, or whether that growth percentage was really the best. And also whether there was something to be done about cost management. And we looked at that operating, the operating percentage, which was 7%, the operating margin, which is kind of low for their industry, but they are a contract manufacturer. We thought there might be a boost on that side as well. But the 50% plus margin that they're getting, gross margin, we thought was exceptional. So...
Yeah, 55% is a pretty good gross margin for a contract manufacturer. And if the bottom line is low, then the cost problem is somewhere in SG&A.
Why don't we move on to the second group? Thank you very much. Second group is Armando, Brian, Ingrid, Linda, and Marianne.
And that's me. I'm the recorder. So I'll go ahead and tell you what we decided on. So question one was which candidate. We went with Anya. We felt like she was a better suited candidate. She had prior CEO experience. Although her salary was higher, we felt that she would be a better cultural fit. On the comp side of things, we felt that the entire leadership team is probably under market and will need to be bumped up. The current CEO is below market, so we need to get to the target market cap for the pay. But we also tied it to the pay for performance. And then the base we settled on market, $550,000 for base. The bonus target was 50%. The long-term incentive was 2% equity, all pay for performance though. And we could measure that up to like 5 years. And then on her unvested, we would actually match her unvested of 600,000, but we would do it over 5 years as well. So that's how we would bring that over. As far as metrics go, we would measure the revenue and EBITDA, but also employee satisfaction, because the company is it's run very well. People are happy, the company's doing okay. So we want to make sure that it is actually a good fit out overall. And as far as getting her, do the relocation, we would mandate that she has a CEO succession in her contract. She must do that because she's on her last mm-hmm. gig. And then as far as any other restrictions, I'm looking at my notes. Just give me a second here. We felt that she's quicker to hit the ground running. We would probably put a clawback in there with milestones because, you know, moving to a new location and acclimating is a little bit harder. So we want to make sure that she does acclimate. So there would be a clawback for like all the relocation and moving. And again, a lot of performance-based metrics behind this investment. And so in the other guy's out purely on, abrasive culture was really a no-go for us. Even though he's lower comp, he wasn't a CEO before. He's in Boston. There's no relocation attached to it, but it's probably, for a very successful company already, it's probably setting him up for failure from the get-go. What did I miss? Anything? I tried to capture everything.
No, I think you did well. I think you hit on the high ones. Again, we didn't have enough time. We ran out, but it is pay for performance, and we could laundry list KPIs and what do we mean by that? So we just didn't get to that. So
great.
It's also mention of it being a turnaround, that the person two was a turnaround and this group wasn't in that or in that mode. So we wanted to make sure we mentioned that. Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you. Next group is Jim, Laura, Mike, Shannon, and Vera.
Well, we never had anybody agree to do anything. Vera took all the notes. I did a lot of the talking, so I told her I would represent us. But we also ran out of time. We spent very little time. We spent no time discussing candidate two. We very rapidly settled on the first candidate. Figured that the biggest challenge we were going to have as an independent director is the two founders who own all the stock, getting them to deal with the sticker shock of what the market is going to demand for a successor here, and probably flowing through the rest of the executive team. The one thing that Michael recommended to us that he's aware of, that there is apparently a source called PAVE. Did I get that right, Michael?
Yeah, it used to be called Options Act. It's now called PAVE.
PAVE.
Which allows, you can subscribe to or get a comp firm who is a member to work with you on a quick activity there, not to do a really expensive market study, but to kind of get feed in the particulars of our firm. And it then gives you comparisons to market data, which gives you a little bit better focused sense of what the market might bear. We didn't have all of that, so we went and just picked numbers.
Mike, can an individual subscribe to this?
It's expensive. So I've only accessed it through big law firms where I have friends who give me access. But I think last I looked, it was about $30,000 a year. It's one of these outfits where the incentive is...
Spell it?
Sorry?
P-A-V-E. P-A-V-E.
P-A-V-E.
Like paving the road.
P-A-I-D.
Yeah. They bought Option Impact, which was another...
Yeah, so what they do is they invite companies to provide certified results anonymously using various criteria like their standard industry code, their location, number of heads, where they are in their financing, a bunch of questions, where their location is. And they'll tell you first, when you put in your data, how many subjects there are, and then you put in what you're looking for, and they'll give you the distribution, they give you bar graphs, they give you charts, they give you all sorts of statistics. And, if you find a situation where there's like 30 or 40 targets, you start to feel pretty good about the data. You get a really good sample. If you find five, you say it's kind of arbitrary, I've used it a lot for executives, but right now, problem I have with it is I always have to call in a favor. And, I feel a little bit like, I usually, take someone out to dinner for it, but they should have something that just do a single search for like 50 or 60 bucks or 100 bucks rather than, on the public side, there's plenty because it all draws from SEC, but this on this private side, it draws from subscribers. And I think there's 6,500 subscribers around the country. So it's not a tiny data set.
Yeah. So to get back on point, we then moved to the compensation issue. We didn't get into the details of the appropriate KPIs for either the short or long-term incentive, but we figured that somewhere between 5.25 and 5.50 was likely to need be what the base needed to be. 70% of base and short-term incentive. We couldn't quite figure out whether the long-term incentive was just stock or whether there's long-term cash incentive and stock on top of that. But it's clear from the case that the candidate is more interested in stock. We didn't have enough data to figure out exactly how to do that, because you're either picking percentage, you're either picking a percentage of the company or a dollar value, and you don't know what the company is, you don't know what the company stock is valued at. So we nominally said $1 million in options to vest over 3 to 4 years. We said, recognize that one of the real challenges with this is going to be the relo issue. We figured that there would be somewhere between $1 million and $1.5 million for a combination of dealing with the unvested stock and dealing with the relo expenses. So that's kind of where we got to.
Okay.
Did I miss anything, Vera? Or anybody else?
Nope, you did a great job.
Good. Thank you. Next team is Amita, Ernie, Ken, Mitchell, and Steven.
Okay, this is Ernie, so I'm the spokesman for the group, but I hope they'll jump in if I miss anything in my note-taking. So I'll start with the end. We went with Dr. Anya as our candidate, but just to back up from that, we really thought that this company, in order to hit the targeted numbers, either has to make acquisitions, and then we had a conversation that maybe this company is ripe to be acquired itself. So we should have that discussion at the board level where they should start considering whether we should be acquired, maybe ask David should to stay on another year or two to get us ready and give him a bonus so that we could sell the company, or at least have a discussion about that. I'm just wondering, where was the succession plan with this company? It went many years and the person was there for 16 years. Where were they? This guy didn't just show up and say he was going to retire and leave. There should have been a succession plan. And so that's part of this too. And then going to the candidate, and plus the 7.5% operating margin, we thought should be higher as well. So maybe there is room in there to find ways to reduce expenses and increase profits for this company. But really, if you're able to hit those targets, you're going to have to consider doing acquisitions or being acquired. Let's go to the candidate itself. So I'll say a comment about candidate number two, who we did not pick. That part about being abrasive, if you look at the background, what that person did is workout plans and taking over companies, short time frames. You could see how they would be viewed as being abrasive because of their job, what they had to do. And that probably wouldn't fit into this culture that we have right here. As far as the salary goes for proposal, we didn't get to finish it, but I'll hit some highlights on it. We talked about no signing bonuses because the comment I made was that should encourage jumping, but we felt that there should be a payment made for the equity lost in the other company. So what they call it, a signing bonus, just payment to cover that cost. As far as the salary, we talked about a base salary of $500,000. The incentives, 70% of that would be another $350,000. LTIP, $100,000. And we talked about everything being tied to metrics. And did you get a chance to write down all the metrics? I'll just rattle off a few that I have on my list here. Is revenue growth, operating income margin growth, revenue margin growth in new markets, revenue margin growth with new products and services, employee retention above current trend, and then you could make 5, 6, 10 other metrics if you wanted to. As far as moving expenses, we didn't talk about that. We did make the comment like you did, Babs, that it's cheaper to live in Massachusetts than in San Francisco. So, but we could do something where you do relocation expenses, make sure they're reasonable, determine what costs could be made, and should also look at moving expenses if there's a spouse involved. I've been involved in that before too, where the spouse is involved in moving. And that might be an incentive to make someone come with you. And, you know, it talks about global, and there should be some conversation about what about travel benefits if there is, you're going to be global. But we didn't get to finish the total salary and the total metrics, but I gave you the high level. Base 500, incentive 70%, which would be 350,000. LTIP 100, all of them tied to metrics. And we didn't get to the point of stock on ownership. But I asked our group, is anything you want to add? I try to rattle off quickly.
Ernie, let me throw this out. You know, it's funny, Mitchell and I both kind of focused in on some information that may have been missing from the case, which was essentially a balance sheet and, you know, leverage that this company has available to itself. And we thought potentially if we didn't know whether they could be acquirers, they might very well be, given their technology and their growth and their growth revenue, you know, an opportune acquire candidate. And we thought, you know, maybe none of the above is the answer here. And we go as a board to the equity owners and say, hey, listen, let's talk to David about sticking around for another year or two till we form an actual strategy as to where we want to go. Because if we want to be acquired, then David can run the ship, we position the company for sale, and we avoid the frictional cost of hiring in anyone new. So we just didn't have enough to go on, though.
We would have liked to have seen the balance sheet. We would like to understand what the leverage is, because we could put a 4-7 multiple on the EBITDA. It would help us understand the equity value, but without understanding the leverage, that would impact David's 1.5% equity ownership. That would also understand what we might want to do as an equity ownership target incentive based to offer Dr. Anya over time to join the company. It would also then inform the ability for over time, even though acquisitions aren't planned immediately, but the ability to lever up the company, do acquisitions when the time was right. So the case would have been helpful if we had that balance sheet information. No, and we also did notice that a 7.5% operating income margin was low, which meant that there was probably fat in the operations, that the company wasn't being managed efficiently. And that was something also that made us think that either it could be a target, or if someone came in who could operate more efficiently, that would be helpful as well.
We're heading to our last two groups, Moonlit, Susan, and Vivek.
I'll speak. So I'm in the same group with Susan, whom you've heard from, and Vivek, who is a clean tech investor. And for me, I lead gaming partnerships at Google. We started with three decision factors. What is the exit option for the company? What are the qualifications for the CEO candidates? And what's the comp? Actually, there's an open question of what do the founders want in terms of the exit option? Do they want high growth, a fast exit, or do they want longer term, more sustainable growth, and then keeping the senior leadership? Because we don't have that information, we fall back to qualification being the most important decision factor, secondary as in exit options, and then tertiary will be comp, as we think the company can grow and then can pay both fairly easily. For the qualifications, very similar to everything shared already, the big thing that moved the needle for us towards Anya against Rick, again, is two things. One is that it's very different running a private company as an independent CEO versus running a public company. And Anya has that over Rick. Second one is, I think been mentioned a few times, Rick's abrasive personality, since it's very important to retain the executives for the current company. So that's a qualification, which in the way is in Anya's favor. For exit options, we felt that if the board wanted, or if the founders wanted fast exit, perhaps Rick can grow the company more aggressively. But in absence of that, just looking at their both qualifications, Anya actually has PE experience, which is also a positive mark for her. And for comp, as we know, Anya's more expensive, but given by the company's growth trajectory, we don't think it's going to be an issue. So of the three decision factors, this one with the least. So we picked Anya. And in terms of the actual comp package, we thought where we can really lean in is the equity value. We wanted to be to start with a 1% equity to start, which is already worth a lot more than her current $600K equity of our current company. There will be a vesting schedule, fairly standard. There will be an earning clause, and there will be equity refresh clause for as bonus for performance incentive. In terms of the cash aspect, we looked at comps around the industry and then picked desktop metal to be the baseline. So I think we might be the most generous when it comes to the comp cash number, which is 580 for base, 85% for short term, 75% for long term, and then the standard relocation and equity buyout. We didn't talk about the actual KPIs, but again, we also think it's depends on what the founders want. Is it fast growth? Is it employee satisfaction? Is it consistency? But it'll be KPIs around the growth elements.
Thank you very much. Our final group is really Robert and Sanjeev, because Rhonda and Susan just randomly happen to be in that last group. So Robert, Sanjeev?
Yeah, I'm the spokesperson. So we're contrarians here relative to the group. We preferred candidate two. There were a few factors. Couple of things. We want retention of the leadership team, and the existing company and the owners want that. That's going to be problematic no matter who we bring in, because we're talking about replacing a CEO who's been with this company for 19 years. And anybody new who comes to the table, and I have personal experience with this, there's going to be some upsetting of the apple cart, if you will. The quote-unquote abrasive personality, we had us scratching our heads a little bit, because if nobody on the board picked it up, then we were trying to figure out, okay, how abrasive is abrasive, and is there's going to be some disruption no matter what, because we're bringing in somebody new. Is this going to be kill the company? We were unconvinced of that, and Sanjeev, you can weigh in when I've done with my soliloquy. We expected that the owners were happy, and to some extent, this was the difference between, there was a bit of a growth and I'll call it a lifestyle business, because ownership was very tightly held. My interpretation is that they were people before profits, and they were doing fine. And they were really not considering an exit for some period of time. And the worry about growth through M&A, the senior leadership team, which I want to keep, has almost zero experience with M&A, in which case that could be a very worrisome direction, unless we're going to buy companies and run them separately and just have accretive earnings and accretive revenues and leave everything to the side. Don't know whether that would be the case or not. 20% growth rate over the 15% growth rate annually is actually pretty good. So we were thinking that from the standpoint of ownership and where the company was going, that it was going to be more status quo than let's look at an exit in the near term. Let's set up for exit in the near term. Let's try to tighten things up from the standpoint of expenses and so forth. I would have thought that given where they were performing, first of all, the industry is relatively nascent, so they probably had a high SG&A to begin with. But for us, we preferred candidate two. We didn't really talk much about compensation. We were looking at something total north of $1 million, which is in line with some of the others in the industry. The significant equity was the worrisome part for us, just because I was trying to get Susan and Rhonda to give us an idea as to what that meant, but they wouldn't take a bite of that apple. So we lived with significant could be 10%, could be north of that, and if I'm one of the owners, then that's a non-starter for me. So that was and relocation and all these other expenses. You know, if I'm looking at $2 to $3 million to bring somebody on relative to where I am right now with Mr. Chen, who's getting about $900K, that could be worrisome for us. So, Sanjeev.
I would just add. Really, our initial reaction was
the abrasive factor to sort of discount candidate two, but then as we looked at it a little bit more closely, we said, you know, that should not be the significant driver. The candidate two also comes from a $700 million business. This is a $300 million business. And yeah, it's, you know, it's a public company, but in general, private companies actually tend to like to hire senior executives or CEOs of public companies. And so that we didn't think that that was necessarily a negative factor. It's a 3D printing industry that was growing. So 20% growth from a compensation standpoint. I think one of the things I looked at was that long-term incentives for the CEO could be around growth beyond 20% because there's a lot of growth opportunity in the industry. We also talked about the operating margin, good gross margins, but poor operating margins. So there would be need for, you know, significant improvement there. Those were some of the big drivers, really, in terms of initially thinking about candidate one and then switching to candidate two, because we just felt that coming from a bigger company, for a company that's trying to grow and in the growth industry, you would bring some more, should we say, experience to the table. He's also local and probably somewhat maybe more motivated because this would be he'd be a first-time CEO. And so those are factors that were maybe that was a soft factor. I think that was really it, Robert. I think that's what we concluded that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Clearly, we got different opinions about this. Now I'd like to pass the ball to Susan and Rhonda for their perspective about, please react to what you heard and then tell us what happened.
I thought that the conversation around choosing number one and why some of the great ideas around, I love the PAVE idea, but we did use the peer group as the basis for making our PAVE decisions, or the board did that way. So that's what was used that way. I'm just thinking of some of the other comments that people had. I thought they were all really good. It just shows you that, you know, the decision, when you're making a decision like this, how different the perspectives are. And of course, everyone wanted more information that way. But that's where I think as a board, you come together. And you, when you have board members who are functional or dysfunctional, you know, the functional ones really could make a good decision for the company. But when there's differences of opinion, it makes it more challenging that way. So I liked all those. And Rhonda may want to comment on what she heard too. We are ready to share the answer, I guess. We were under pressure while under six.
Just a couple things. I think it's really, you know, it's really good that many of you brought out the whole idea that, you know, the operating margin was low compared to what they were doing. And that just is, you know, is indicative of part of the problem of being fairly stagnant in terms of their leadership for many years and things just kind of going along and no one sort of stepping up and saying, hey, this isn't quite working. And so I think that although, you know, there's a comment that, you know, the company wasn't considering necessarily an IPO or an acquisition, you know, the founders had a bit different opinion on where the company should go. And so I do appreciate that, you know, some of you recognizing that there was no real succession plan after 19 years. And, you know, I'd like to say that that's atypical of organizations we work with, but it isn't, unfortunately. A lot of times things are humming along and things appear to be fine. And, you know, nobody's thinking about, well, what happens next, right? And so, this change in leadership is coming at a time when it was really needed. And I, you know, part of, you know, what you all discovered is some of the cracks in the armor of the business. So that's really positive. And I will say that by no, we did not hold up signs or give any hints, but Robert and Zanji are correct. The founders, the board rather, went with candidate number two. A couple of key factors there, in addition to some of what was talked about, is that they were looking for somebody who wanted to be there longer term, right? They wanted to put somebody in place that would take this company to the next level. And that individual, you know, within this, you know, really, they felt more strongly that that was candidate number two. And I think someone made the point, I think it was you, Robert, that it would have sort of come out, because as board members, you would have had this conversation, you would have had an opportunity to interview the candidates, that this abrasiveness would have either shown, and therefore you wouldn't have placed this candidate into one of the top two, or they, you know, or it wasn't as apparent, or as, or maybe it was wanted, you know, to some degree, because there was such, you know, sort of low, you know, very low turnover, high retention, and you know, some need to think about the sustainability of this business as being strictly organic. At some point, that's going to end. Susan, if you want to talk about the pay.
Yeah, and just a little more comment on the, we don't know that this actually happened on the abrasiveness, but there is always executive coaching that can be done too. So I'm sure that was part of it there. So the pay, we went, the company went really low on the base salary at 425 for this candidate too, but went higher on the bonus target and the long-term incentive, 80%, which was more in line with what the public companies were doing for the STI. And then we just matched that with the LTIP. The LTIP did include equity as part of the, as part of the LTIP that way.
And I, can I just add to that, around the base pay, you might think, geez, that seems really low, right? Because in the scope of what the is showing at the 50th percentile from the public companies. But one of the things that we coach our clients about a lot is that we not only have to think about the role and what you should pay for the role, but where is the person coming in to that role? And so if we, you know, if we were coaching a client and they were bringing in someone like candidate number one, who has, you know, significant experience as a CEO in a similar sized organization, we would say to them, you know, you can't be below the 50th of the marketplace. In fact, you probably need to be somewhere between the 50th and the 75th percentile for base pay, because you're bringing in somebody with significant experience. But the other part of that is that in any organization at any level, someone can be a learner, can be gaining experience in that new role. And someone like candidate number two, we didn't feel it was as necessary to bring that person all the way to the 50th percentile of the market yet, because we were bringing them in with other components, short-term and long-term incentive, that looked much better, much richer than the current incumbent, the current CEO. But really recognizing that this individual has a lot of opportunity and to grow and move, you know, base salary more towards the middle, more towards the 50th, as they continue to show that they can take this job and really make it something.
Right. And then the short-term incentive was, as you all mentioned, focused on the growth, revenue growth, and whether to expand into other customer industries. So some targeted growth numbers there. They didn't do anything with that income, operating income issue, which would have been a good idea that way. A sign-on bonus to cover the unvested equity, fully cover it. And the severance package was a little bit lower, like 1 year base and STI, not so much two. I know that's evolving. And then there was no need for relocation, but there was a perquisite given of $10,000 for, which is now called a lifestyle spending account, which is, do you need a financial planner? Do you want a car allowance? Like those types of things were included in that.
Thank you very much, both of you, for writing the case and presenting what actually happened. It was fascinating. I would just like to comment one thing, and then we will have to go. Like the two of you, I find with most of my clients, leadership succession, having a talent pipeline, it isn't being done. And one of the reasons that it's being done is because the board expects the CEO to do it. And for lots of obvious reasons, the CEO has lots of reasons to delay leadership succession or not do it at all. And one of the things I am finding with some of my clients, particularly the high-tech companies, the what's called the compensation committee, which historically is focused on remuneration of the CEO, is now called the Compensation and Succession Planning Committee. Mm. And the board is basically saying leadership succession is too important to leave it to the CEO. It's a board responsibility. And if the CEO suddenly retires, suddenly dies, and there's no succession in plan, shame on us. That's our fault, not the CEO's fault. And so the Compensation and Leadership Development Committee is the board-centered focus of that, not the CEO. CEO implements it along with HR.
Larry, wouldn't the succession responsibility, at least in public companies, traditionally be the purview of nominating and governance?
That's no. I found nominating and governance focuses on the board itself, not necessarily leadership succession in the company itself.
It should be the HRCC is where that should live. The Human Resources and Compensation Committee is where that should live.
In theory, yes.
In theory,
if the CEO is not motivated to do anything about it, then HR is not going to be motivated to do anything about it. So
it's a board problem too, though, Larry. I'm interviewing for a board where there are 10 board members and only two are under 70.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
A question, Paul Harvey. So because the group was, three for number one, one for number two, kudos to Robert, I guess, being a teacher in a B school pays off. What really, really happened though? So you went with number two. Was there organ rejection? Was he successful? I mean, can you share that? Like, was it a wise decision, I guess?
Yeah, it was successful. And he is still in play today. Oh, so I haven't kept up to date. I'm not sure how many, if they've gone through a full acquisition yet, but that was certainly something they were considering.
I do recall that the board, they were board director, got very involved in like talking to the CEO, like weekly, like really trying to mentor the CEO that had only been a division president before. And then was really up to speed pretty quickly, and that board chair left the board. So has been doing well.
What about the leadership? How long a period of time has the person been there? You said it a while. How what's the time frame?
The CEO, the new CEO. It's been, I think, about 4 years.
Okay, that's good.
I think it's been about 4 years. Yeah.
What about the leadership team? It was important to retain them. How did that work out with this CEO?
Well, I think the chief people officer left eventually. the CFO stayed that way. So yes, otherwise there was good retention.
I want to thank you both for a fascinating case, and I think it was a good discussion all around. So thank everybody thank for you. Participating. Look forward to seeing you next month at Seat at the Table. We're going to have another fascinating case, but it's going to be dealing with something that's actually in the papers today, which is, you know, we have a well-known company approaching bankruptcy. And that's that me and 21 or whatever.
23 and me.
So we're going to be dealing with what's the responsibility of a board as a company approaches bankruptcy. So we look forward to seeing you next month and enjoy this coming spring that seems to be approaching us. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. It was a great discussion. Great case.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.